Welcome to another episode of the Tactical Leadership Podcast, where we focus on building better businesses. I believe in order to be the best leader that you can be, you must be willing to be the first follower and have a servant mentality when you're in a leadership position. If you want to be the best leader that you possibly can be sure to stay tuned and listen to industry leaders and hear how they built winning cultures in their own businesses.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Tactical Leadership. Today, I'm speaking with Jason Waller. We're going to discuss how he has built a power home solar business and has a great story called True Underdog with his podcast. But before we begin, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Knightley Productions. If you want to create tactical content that delivers, head over to knightley.productions and figure out how they can help you take your podcast, your YouTube channel, any content you're creating, break through the noise and deliver tactically. Jason, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Man, I'm super excited about having you on here because you're a heavy hitter. We were just talking before the show. You're expanding down here into the Southeast, just opened a branch of Atlanta. And I want to give the audience an idea of what you're working on because you're no just run-of-the-mill guest that we've had on here before. You're one of those high-end individuals that has a power home solar, as I mentioned. You're the CEO of that. You founded it in 2014. At this point, you're employing more than 1,700 people. You've reached almost $1 billion in annual revenue. Mm-hmm. You're also the host of a top five Apple podcast for entrepreneurs called True Underdog.
Yep.
You've won Entrepreneur of the Year four times, not just once, not just twice. You're on that Tom Brady trail.
I'm three short of Tom, but I'm working on it.
Hey, you're almost there. You're almost there. And the big thing that you really like to talk about is there's no elevator to success. The climb only happens one step at a time. You let every True Underdog podcast be that step that elevates you. You've been featured in Inc. magazine. I mean, it just keeps going on and on. EY Entrepreneur of the Year, Stevie's Entrepreneur of the Year, Globee's Entrepreneur of the Year. At the end of the day, you are out here just killing it. Mm-hmm. Before we dive into that story, what would you like the audience to know about you, Jason, personally?
Well, I mean, I didn't finish high school. I didn't go to college, right? I grew up in a less than middle class family, some abuse. And, you know, I structured my success on failure, on grit, on determination, on wanting more, on haters. I used haters as fuel. I used people saying I can't as a way to prove them wrong. And that my goal and my map isn't to prove them wrong, but it gives me the gas in my vehicle to continue to push. And, you know, if I can do it, you know, it's my third business I've opened up from the ground up. This is the most successful business. The other two are really, really good. But, you know, when I opened this business up, I had some major bumps. You know, nobody ever gave me money to open a company. I didn't have to take any loans. I mean, I literally, you know, opened up my first business in my master bedroom with a tile board from Home Depot and manila folders and a marker. And I was selling home security door to door while I was still working another job at Verizon. So, you know, I work hard and I try to strive to empower, you know, employees and peers to be leaders. You know, I try to motivate and have a vision. And I think that, you know, the biggest thing folks need to know is that you can't be held back by anything. You know, patience is key. You can't allow where you grow up, privilege, no privilege, what city you live in, what the color of your skin is, male or female. Nothing should hold you back. You do create your own map and it's your world to live in and create that.
Man, I truly love that. I want to start right at the top of what you said, where I did the same thing when I entered entrepreneurship and the security world, a little bit different than alarm systems, but you started door to door, which a lot of us have done. I used to do door to door for, it was called Weed Man, and it was weed control, yard care, right? But I literally knock on the door, hey, I'm Weed Man. That doesn't go off real well. And you got a lot of no's, you got a lot of doors slammed in your face. I'd imagine you've experienced that in the door to door.
Yep.
With all the no's, and now you're coming back and saying, don't let anybody limit you. Have you ever had that piece of like, man, I'm getting a lot of no's. I'm getting a lot of pushback. Nobody wants what I'm selling. Have you ever felt that? And if so, how do you overcome it?
Well, in the door knocking business, you know, when I was the first company I opened up, I was 24 years old. And that was the home security company. And when I did that, I had a full-time job and I was doing that part-time to build it from the ground up. And it was hard because, you know, there was a few moments there where I had people with college education and MBAs that worked for me. So I was insecure. I struggled with like, I'm leading these people and writing their check, and I'm not getting paid, right? Because when you open a business, entrepreneurs know, you get paid the least for a long time. And that's how you build a company. You can't be milking it dry. You got to reinvest. And so a lot of, you know, ramen noodles and peanut butter and jellies. But, you know, I would be out there with all these people and be intimidated. They wouldn't want to do their job. They wouldn't want to do training. They would be out there, you know, I'm paying them, you know, hourly to knock doors or paying them for sales. And then, you know, I started depending on them to get numbers and I just struggled. And I remember being in a meeting with 20 plus people in one of the offices. I finally was big enough to get an office. And I said, hey, we have like, our numbers are bad. Who's going to come in for Saturday for training? And I said, you know, all the guys with zeros. I mean, you able to come in? And they're all like, no, no, no. One guy's like, I'm not coming in to train. And I snapped. And are we able to cuss on this show?
I don't edit out cuss words, so you can.
Okay,
just check it. Let's hear what you actually said.
So I literally said, excuse me? And I snapped. I said, you know what, get your fucking shit, get the fuck out of my office. And everyone looked at me, I said, no, get your shit, get the fuck out of my office. We don't need you anymore. Is there anybody else that doesn't want to train? Because I want people that want to fucking win. I'm sick of sitting here belly aching and being everyone being prima donnas and not wanting to do anything. I'm done. You get the fuck out. Anybody else? They all showed up for training. That was one moment there where I was taking notes and people not listening. And I had to take control and change it, you know, and many times over my career and in all the companies that happened, another time was at Power Home Solar. The first year we were open, we lost over $1 million. I sold my house. I put all the money I sold my house on. You know, I had this house on the lake, sold it, downsized, put the money in there. My wife's giving me the stink eye. I'm not getting a paycheck for the first 22 months being open at Power Home Solar. But that first year I was sitting with my family going, I think I need to close the doors. We had about 35 employees. That's like, we can't do this. Like, we can't get profitable. I see this vision. I see where it's going, but this is the first time I can't make something really work. And I prayed about it and I woke up the next day and I just, again, like a switch turned on. And I went in, I had 30 people. By the end of the day, I had about 12 people. I fired 20 something. And I started doing everything. I made the phone calls. I ran the sales appointments. I called for permitting. I got the designers to do the design. I helped with the warehouse. You name it. I put it all together and started taking control myself. So saved on payroll and then started understanding all the aspects of the business again. And then it started to grow. And by the end of 16, we ended up with about 100 employees, 10 million in sales, still lost some money. 17, we did 40 million in sales. We were profitable, 250 employees. And right now you just mentioned we're north of 1800 employees. We'll do 750 million in revenue this year. But there was a moment where I was going to close the doors and all those employees wouldn't have a job right now. If I didn't sell my house and put the money back in, you got to bet on yourself. But all those no's, you have a choice when someone says no. You can quit. You can throw in the white flag. You can be like, I can't do this anymore. Or you can just push through, because I feel like the more no's I get, not only do I learn from the no or the failure, but I'm closer to a yes, because it only takes one. And you mentioned, I said, there's no elevator in success. You got to take the steps. You need small wins. The problem is people set long-term dream goals. And when they start on that process, if they don't get instant gratification, they quit. They think, oh, it's like losing weight. I'd love to shed 30 pounds. I know I can't shed 30 pounds in a day or a week or a month. So, you know, I play for a tie when it comes to weight gain, though. Like, I work out, but I eat like shit. So I'm playing for a tie, not to win. However, if I wanted to win, I would know 1, 2, 3 pounds a week makes sense. If I want that 40, I got to get to 12 or 14 weeks. It's the same thing in business. It's the same thing in trying to capitalize, and you're in sales or you're building an organization or you're a leader and you're empowering people. It's one little step at a time, one little win at a time, and setting baby goals to get all the way up to the top goal.
And one thing I love about what you're talking about, I was on Clubhouse last night and I was part of a panel, and it was a panel of creatives, dancers, performers. And somebody asked business advice. I'm not a dancer. I dad dance. I TikTok dance at best. Somebody asked a business advice to them, and every one of them said, you have to save every cent. If you get paid, you throw it in the bank and you hold it, you put a fist around it, because you don't know when your next gig's coming up. I stepped in as the business mind and said, not quite as harshly as you just said, or bluntly, because some people have those egos that might get hurt a little bit. But I said, essentially what you just said, where you have to double down on yourself. And you have a quote that I absolutely love: scared money won't make money. Mm-hmm. And you kind of highlighted that, but summarizing, like if you're scared to invest in yourself, right, with that money, like you're talked about, selling a house is a big decision, right? Taking that from your family to give to this other family you're building, that's a huge decision. Was there somebody along the lines that was like, hey, man, you got to do this?
No.
Was there a coach, a mentor that's like, do this?
It was me not wanting to fail. So I'm the type of person, like we can love each other. And I appreciate your services to your military. First of all, I want to say thank you for that because it's such a big deal. I always say not only is military underpaid, cops are underpaid, teachers are underpaid. They got to do a whole revamp to get people paid the right thing and get the right education for the right group of folks. But if I were in the military or I was going to war, the type of leader I would be is if it means me and you were boys, but you got to cut your arm off for us to win, motherfucker, you got one arm less because we're winning. That's just the deal, right? It doesn't matter. We are winning. And so when I'm at the point in business where I couldn't lose, I mean, I had to look at my family. My wife was like, what? And I'm like, I'm not going to fail. I have to do this. And if I don't, that regret of not doing it is forever. What if I would have done that? I watched my old man and I love my dad's a better grandfather than he was a father, but there are a lot of great things he still showed me as a father, hard work, never letting people affect, what they think of him. Now, there's things he also showed me on the bad side. He never managed money, filed bankruptcy 4 or 5 times in his life, right? He wrote checks he couldn't handle, And so the things that I learned from him, one of the things is he had an opportunity. He was a blue-collar worker for AT&T in a factory doing bill print center. And we lived in Arizona, grew up in Arizona. We got transferred to North Carolina. Before we moved, he had an opportunity with his friend who opened video stores when video stores were cool in 1993 and 94. I mean, this is, Blockbuster.
The good old days.
You go rent movies on Tuesday. In fact, I worked at the video store to help pay bills because his friend owned it. And my dad, I remember Mike, his late friend said, hey, Bill, if you stay here, I'll help you open a sub shop and let your wife, my mom, Sherry, have a bakery next to it. We'll have those smells go into the video store. And my dad thought about it. He would have loved to open his own company, but he was a blue collar dude. I had a little brother and sister with asthma. And I remember sitting in the living room watching him tell my mom, I'm not going to do it. I got to take the safe route. We're going to transfer. I've got, 10 more years with AT&T, all those things. Now, I ain't mad that he did that. I totally get it. But he played to not lose. He played it safe. And so I learned at 14 at that age, watching the next few years, him work his ass off and struggle. We lived in a trailer park and had no money and we had to shop at a flea market. I mean, you name it, right? We're getting old food that was expired from fucking swap meet. I realized in my life there that if I had a chance to play to win, I was going to play to win. So I didn't have that regret. He's had that regret. Man, I wonder what would have happened. I never wanted to live with that. I always said if the horse came by, my ass was jumping on. And if I fell off, that's okay. At least I jumped on. But if I don't jump on, I'm going to be like, man, what would happen if I jumped on? And to me, that is worse than not trying.
Man, I couldn't agree more. And I love, you brought up the military side of stuff. If you're in war, there is no lose, right? And I think people lose perspective on that a little bit where I'm used to be a cop here in Atlanta, right? So I've seen that perspective. If I got in a fight, I'm not fighting not to lose because at the end of the day, you're losing your life, right? Mm-hmm. In the military, you're losing lives. I lost guys, right? If you're fighting not to lose and you're not fighting to win, the Vietnam War happens all over again. So many times with long history, you can look at and correlate. I love taking lessons from the battlefield to the boardroom. And when you bring it up like that, I mean, if you could take that type of passion into what you're doing and it's like, I can't play to lose. I'm going to go win and seize the day. I think the universe loves audacity like that. And people feed off of it. Mm-hmm. You see people getting attracted to you because of that level of audacity where you're like, hey, we're doing this. And the level of excitement and passion you bring to it. Do people feed off that around you?
I think, yeah. I think there's a lot of people out there that they don't want to play prevent defense. There are some that want to, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's a place in this world and we need people that play it safe. Because that's what it is. When you play to not win, you're playing it safe. And playing it safe, there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just not built that way. Seems like you're not built that way. Some people can't do that. It's not enough. There's nothing wrong with that. I have a brother and sister. Playing it safe works for them. That's fine. It doesn't make me better than them. In fact, my life's way more stressful than theirs is. right? But my life's way more energetic and exciting than theirs is because they play it safe. I'm not built that way. God builds us on what we are supposed to do. And if you're intended to be a leader, or you're intended to, you know, enroll people and follow your dream and do great things and empower and make movements, then that's what you need to do. If you're not, you're just part of the group, there's nothing wrong with that either. Then get in where you fit in. But people have to figure out. And I go back, I coached girls basketball. I wasn't good. I learned from this guy, Damien, who taught me a lot. But where I was good, because I couldn't shoot a basketball for shit. I can't dribble for shit. But I was always great at defense when I played. I mean, great at defense. I would foul out or get ejected every single damn game. And people love that because the best guy shut him down when I was playing. Well, when I taught, you know, I have three daughters and a son. And when I coached basketball, I was like, look, we're just going to have the best defense in the damn league. And so I would have these back then eight, and then I coached all the way till they were 13 or 14. And we would play these rec leagues first, these pay to play. And I would coach the girls on the best defense. You know, we would do some, you know, download, you know, some basketball drills to shoot and dribble. And you didn't get to draft your team. So you really got, you know, whoever the league gave you. So, you know, you get a kid picks their nose, another kid that chases a butterfly, a kid that can make a free throw. I mean, it's just a mixture of people. But I went in and I taught these girls that your job every single play is to come grab that ball and steal that ball. I want turnovers like crazy. I want you so close they know what you ate. I want you chest bumping them with your hands out. I want you in their face. I want block shots. I want steals. I'm not worried about buckets. I want this stuff. And I coached that. That's why Damien came and taught me some other ways to coach, but he loved that. We would shut teams down. Parents would come to me and be like, look, I mean, you're really loud and aggressive on the court, but my daughter has always been in a shell and she is so aggressive. I love to see her be tough on the court. And it just, I saw it inspire these young girls to be tough, because girls are usually not allowed to be tough, or they're held back, or, you know, it's frowned upon and they're playing sports. And, you know, you get girls are meaner than boys. Like, they're bullies. Like, when girls bully girls, it's worse than boys bullying boys. And so You when you get these girls that are quiet or in the corner and shy, and you can get them to get out of their skin on the court and be tough and shut people down, I saw like, wow, this is exciting. I'm helping these girls. It's not just about basketball. They're able to go out there and be somebody else and be tough and be strong. And then maybe that can help their future. And so I kind of took some of those lessons in business. And, you know, I have an 80-20 rule in our company. And, you know, when I went in and fired all those people and started building, I made this my mind up. And I found out GE did it later too, but it was something like this. But I said every single month, our team is required to fire 20% of our staff. Every month. We're at 1,800 employees, but we've probably fired 1,500 this year and hired 2,000. And we do it on purpose. I set the KPIs. Here's the line. And because I'm a believer, the top 20% of a staff does 80% of the work. And the next 60% does 20% of the work. And your bottom 20, they don't do shit but hold everybody down. They're slow. They don't pay attention. It's just a job. They're complaining. They're negative. They're cancerous. You name it. They're the people that you got to eliminate. And so rather than somebody start spoiling in your organization and start infesting negativity to get others to be bad like them and you know, see other things, you got to fire. I hate when someone quits. I get pissed. Like, why didn't you fire them? Why did you let them quit? Like, I don't want them to quit on their terms. I want us to eliminate their job because they didn't do it, because we're not here to make friends. Everybody in our organization loves what they do and they're part of a movement. Our culture is top notch. They love it. They love they love that we're changing the world. They love that we're empowering people to own their energy. It is a game changer. However, there's, you know, if I'm playing basketball and I can't put up points, they're going to cut my ass. Right? So we run an organization. Here's your KPIs. I don't care if you're customer service, you need to take X amount of calls with X amount of QA calls that are positive. If you're an installer, you got to have X amount of jobs completed with this many services. If you're a salesperson, you got to have this. When you draw the line for everybody and you start replacing 20% of your staff every month that are the bottom feeders, your company grows like this. We're not UPS or FedEx. We're not looking to stay flat. Nothing against those companies, but they're about retention. Look, we've got people been with us 4 and 5 years. 3 years, 2 years, 5 years, whatever. But we also have a high churn rate on the bottom. And all it takes is a bunch. Oh, another one popped to the top. Oh, another one popped to the top, and you just keep going. And then some have a shelf life. When I look at our organization, I love all our employees that love our brand. Everyone that's positive and wants to do something, I want to do everything I can for them. We have, you know, the Inc. magazine. did the interview with me because I said, Michaels, we empower our employees to act like owners because one day they will be. My whole goal is to take us public or have a life-changing transaction for each one of them to have a life-changing event. That's the goal. But I want the 80% to get that, not the 20% shitbags that are holding everybody down. I'm just not a believer in that. Everybody's responsible for their score. If it's a training issue and you can't do your job, that's on us. If it's a learning issue that we're not showing you or you're not getting it, that's on us. But in our business, in any business, in my belief, if they have passion, they love what they do, and they give 110%, then there's no reason they should ever be in the 20%, period. That's just my belief. And I have I struggle because I say this in all our sales meetings and production meetings. I ask folks, I go, look, your check went in, right, Friday? Every other Friday, your check goes in 100%, right? Yeah, we've never messed that up. No, great. How come I'm only getting 70% effort? Can you pay us 30% back? No, well then, well, what am I doing? How come I can pay you 100%, but you're giving me 70%? That's unacceptable. And that's how I look at it. We run a business almost like a sports league, like a sports team. Like, we want the best players on the court and the best bench. And if your ass expires because you're not doing what you need to do, then you got to go. We don't have to be mad. We tell you when we hire you. Be in that top 80%. That's not hard. We're not asking you to be in the top 20%. We're asking you to be a gazelle that's in the top 80 so a lion doesn't get your ass. That's all.
I love that perspective because a lot of people want to, like you said, focus on that retention piece. And by churning that bottom, it keeps that the life of the organization, right, kind of flowing.
Hungry. People are hungry.
Exactly, because they're all motivated. It inspires that little bit of competition among the team. Everybody drives harder. And what I love about that is it's not – while it may sound to some, I honestly love it, but to some it might sound a little bit harsh. What it enables you to do, obviously, like you said, the growth spike and you're experiencing it. And I mean, your growth has been amazing. There's a reason you won all these awards attached, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reason why there's so much attached to the success of your business, but you're not stopping there. Obviously you have passion in everything you do, yeah. But you're also bringing a purpose. Having those types of people attached to your organization is allowing you to also bring purpose back into what you're doing, where you're supporting causes where you've teamed up with like the Detroit Lions with Toys for Tots, mm-hmm. St. Jude's, where you're being part of a lot of what they're doing. Military, let's get a little bit more personal with me and my background. You did a military makeover show with Power Home Solar for a Marine Master Gunnery. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you have the Detroit Tigers, Justin Verlander, my favorite pitcher. Honestly, love the dude and his beautiful wife, Kate Upton. But you're supporting their military-style rocks that are happening.
Yep.
Because you're so hard-nosed about, and I say hard-nosed with quotes around it, right? Because you have that level of expectation for your team, it's now enabling you to go back with purpose and bring purpose attached to the passion. Is that part of like the culture and the dynamic as the leader of this organization that you're really shifting and creating this command climate, if you will, with the organization kind of expressing all of that? Like, hey, this is a team. Everybody put in 100% and look at the impact we're making, not just within the organization. And solar is a big thing. It's making huge impacts just around the world. But you're also giving back to the local communities. You're giving back to different organizations. Is that just part of like the overall like mission, vision, values you have attached to the company that the employees are buying into be in that top 20?
I think it is. And it's, you know, it's, and I love, look, Justin Verlander and Kate Upton Patriot Ruck is our favorite event. Hands down, it is an awesome event. And he's such a good dude. And I'm a Tigers fan. So this is like, oh my gosh, I'm hanging out with, yeah, but I'm hanging out with Justin Verlander. I'm like, this is awesome. Shucks. Right. And then the military makeover, we did two of them. We just did we did this year and we did 2 years ago. And that was awesome to give back to a veteran, have his energy bill be free. We did one in Georgia. That was a couple months ago. And then we did one in Missouri last year. Anytime we can give back, I'm a big believer, is when your organization is flourishing, you got to give to the communities. And so we empower our directors, our local leaders, our project managers, or district managers to bring to us some philanthropy opportunities in the communities. And then we do on a national scale some of the big ones. We want to be in the community. It's not just about selling someone, you know, solar panels and energy efficiency products. You know, we love what we do because it impacts, you know, ownership for people. It empowers people to control their energy costs, it will save the planet. I mean, I'm not saying climate change and solar are neck and neck. That's not my driving force. It is a part of it, but really, you know, I got to do a roundtable with Donald Trump in September, and you know, my whole thing is Republicans, you know, talk about on TV, solar's, you know, only about climate change. It's for the left. And the left's like, they would never do solar. They don't want to save the planet. All of this nonsense. And people don't realize 70% of our buyer is Republican, of our buyer. We've got, you know, almost 30,000 customers. We did a survey. They're mostly Republican. They're ones that drive pickup trucks and have a little land and do this. A lot of the Democrats that are in the inner cities, they have condos and they have apartments. They can't get solar on their roof. And so they're not buying it like the Republicans are. So I wanted to share that story roundtable with Trump and his team before the election, because I didn't know which way the election would go. I mean, nor do I really care. My point is I wanted them to understand that solar isn't Republican or Democrat. It's American. It creates American jobs. We use American-made panels. It's free enterprise. It allows people to own their power and empower them. And that's what us Americans like to do. We don't like to be told what to do. We want to be able to control our own stuff. That's part of going solar. And so the climate change is just an extra perk, right? Just like adding value to your home is an extra perk. You know, the tax credit's extra perk. But the driving force is the empowerment. And so that allows us, when we do that, to get into these communities and embrace these communities with their philanthropy, because our drive, like we do so well in like a city like Detroit, it's us versus everybody, right? The, you know, in military is like us versus the world. Like we're, you know, anything that's like bonding, that's where Power Home flourishes. And that's how our culture is built. You know, we're Power Home strong. We doubled in size during the pandemic. We talked about closing down. It was a heated conversation with the executives in late March, where they were like, hey, let's go furlough. And I've got a great team, by the way. I hire people smarter than me. I hired a president because I didn't know what EBITDA was. I hired a CFO. Like, you know, I hire people smarter than me because I believe in life and in business. Everything's a puzzle and you got to fit the right pieces in. You can't do things yourself. And there's things I can't do very well. And there's things I do well. So we got to find and complement each other. Well, we are all having a conversation. There's five of us. And it gets heated because a couple of them were like, let's furlough and shut down for a few months. And this is before unemployment came out, the PPA. Now, listen, the PPA stuff didn't help us because we had 800 employees when the pandemic hit. But this is how I'm going back to your culture question. This will show what our culture is like. So I thought about it, and it was the day after GM's executives took a pay cut. And I said, well, guys, we're not going to close. What? I said, nope, not going to happen. And here's why. Because as long as the customer still wants to get solar, we need to have these people come get jobs, because Lucy, who's a single mom who works in the call center, she's got to buy formula for her kid. And Mike, who's an installer, is the only provider. He's got to pay rent and pay his power bill or maybe a solar bill if he's got solar with us. We have to do it for them. So what we're going to do is we're going to go off and pay off payroll indefinitely. And we're going to ask our vendors to kick the can down. We're not going to pay them anything for a few months. And we're going to capitalize our cash to stay open for our people. And it got a little heated, but they didn't have a choice, right? So, but, you know, some agreed, some didn't, and they finally all agreed. And so we told the company we were going to stay open. We sent the message out. I did a video. We sent an email. I went to a couple of the offices to show them, look, fear, because I have a kid with autoimmune disease, right? Fear, I can't dictate it. Everyone's is different. You know, you might live with an elderly grandparent, you know, you every situation's different. So if you want to stay home, and you're scared, you can do that. Use all your vacation time, we'll pay you, all your PTO time. After that, you'll go inactive, keep your benefits. We can't pay you, but you'll go inactive, keep your benefits. But if you have to come to work and provide for your family, we will have masks, we will have sanitizer, we will do everything we need to do. And it will be as safe as possible. We'll follow every single CDC guideline out there for every one of our locations. We have 23 of them. So we thought, let's see how this resurrects. We told them we're going off payroll. We called the NFL teams, told them we're not paying our partnerships, called our other vendors. We moved everything to September. Like that gave us some cash. That message got taken so personal for a lot of people. Almost all our directors and all the sales leaders said we'd like to volunteer 20 or 30% of our commission to make sure we stay open to pay people. I mean, it was hearty. We were like in tears on an executive call, like this is the kind of culture we built. These people love people in our organization because we're one team. And so we, you know, they did that for one check, and then we didn't realize what was about to happen. But, you know, we partnered with Generac and started doing battery storage, and things took off like wildfire. So we didn't really need them to do anything. And we still stayed off payroll for several months and then moved the vendors down. But we, instead of losing employees, we probably lost 20% that went inactive, but we went from 800, we finished the pandemic with 1500 employees. So you can see the size that we grew. We doubled in size during this pandemic. People were so inspired. And then we were hiring good people that were let go in other companies. So the culture that we bring of giving back to the community and being one family and having each other's back, you know, we knock on wood, but we had maybe 40 or 50 cases since COVID happened of employees having it that I'm aware of, give or take. None were really bad. One was, and it was the first one. And he was in Michigan. And he was an older gentleman, smoked his whole life, a lot of issues, and he got hospitalized for 3 weeks. But when we first found out in April, when all this went down and that location came, we had to shut that location down for 2 weeks and bomb it, let everybody, you know, stay away. And some of those guys didn't have vacation time and they were emailing upset. But because all our employees stepped up and the executive stepped up, we were able to pay those people when we had to shut down offices full pay. We were able to give them full paychecks so they didn't have to worry about that. And that's the kind of thing that we do at Power Home, or what to me, leaders learn to give back. You know, whether we do 100 million in sales or 700 million in sales, my pay is the same. I'm not making more. The company's worth more. We reinvest everything for our brand and our people. And that's kind of the smartest way to grow a business, because then people can get excited, rally around that, and feel empowered if they're part of something.
It's that reinvest piece that I wanted to highlight, and you hit it right there where you're empowering people, you're investing in your people, because if you don't invest and they stay, people are worried about it. If you invest and they leave, well, we just invested all that, but what if you don't and they stay, right? And there's such a paradigm attached to what you're talking about where you're really highlighting that piece of paying it forward to people. You know, you're ahead now, so you're remaining that hand back, giving that hand back to bring those people forward with you. Overall, everything you're doing, and solar obviously is the direction that a lot of things are going for so many different reasons. Everything you're doing across these brands and the culture you've built, the business you've built, what's the legacy you want to leave on the world with all of these great things you're doing?
I just want to make people have a better place than what they had before they came to Power Home when it comes to work. For my family, it's making sure that they continue to help people out. I mean, I love what I do in Power Home Solar. I love it. You know, I used to do home security. I loved that. And then I got burned out because everybody was doing it. And I was like, I want to do something more impactful. So I love being in solar. And I love it because, you know, homeowners save money. They don't have to be without their lights. You know, we use American-made products. I mean, just you name it, our employees love it. It's exciting. So I love it. And I love our team and I love people growing, you know, getting a call from a director who started as an energy consultant and he's been promoted five times. This is an example. And, you know, he bought his first house or, you know, another, those stories we hear, we love. We love our employees, better their lives. But the podcast that I started with True Underdog, I started when I won the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Award. You know, you get invited up to like a party and you're like part of a fraternity and they're like, dude, you got to write a book. And I'm like, dude, I've never read a book. So I'm not writing a book. And they're like, well, you should do something, dude, blah, 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 blah. So I thought about it and I said, I'm going to start this podcast for shits and giggles. And I have a lot of friends that play in the NFL, not a lot, a handful. So I'd put a couple of them on, be like, dude, you're going to hook me up. You're going to get on my show. We're going to talk about, you know, underdog stories. Well, then I lucked out because I had the same financial advisor as Kevin O'Leary. I got Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank on. And then like things, all of a sudden my show started exploding. And I'm like, what? And I was doing this like for fun. Well, then it started being really impactful. I started having people message me, man, your message made me open up this other office. I wasn't scared, you know, scared money, don't make money. Hey, I didn't quit. I did this. Hey, I reinvested my, it started to be like, wow. This, just like philanthropy, when you give back to veterans or you give back to St. Jude's, or you give back, you know, we did the Give Power. We gave over $1 million for clean water in third world countries. When you do those things, that feels wonderful. But you know what feels equally or maybe even a little better is some random person you didn't mean to help with. I mean, you're saying things and they got some gems in there to change their life. You're like, wow, I'm giving wisdom to people. This is amazing. So that feeling is fantastic. And I think that that's where I would want my legacy to be, is that I helped people, whether they worked for me, whether it was my family, whether they listened to the show, better themselves. Because in today's world with the pandemic and the country broken in half and everything going on, people need to be helping each other more and we need to be more united. And we're just not. At Power Home, we are, whether you're white, black, green, orange, Democrat, Republican, girl, male, female, doesn't matter. We're Power Home strong. And we don't have enough of that everywhere else. So it's like a break for some people to go to work. Like it's a family again. It's a team again. And, you know, we just got to get back to that. And so if I can instill wisdom and knowledge of things I've experienced, you know, I didn't read books. I learned from other people. Like I'm a sponge. I get around people. I learn from everybody every day, but I also learn from my own failures. I fail all the time. And then I'm like, shit, I ain't doing that again. I'm going to change it and do it this way. And I'm like, oh, that didn't work. Shit. Oh, and now it works. Great. You have to do that. And I think the biggest message to people, you know, is just help other people out. You know, that's what this world is about. You know, that's the best thing you can do on this planet is help people out. You know, things might not be end of the world, you know, or mean the world to you, but something you say can change somebody's world. And it's important that you give that wisdom out.
Jason, I truly inspiring, man. I'm speechless on that, man. I love to hear the answers to those type of legacies, man, because it's like, not only are you talking about it, right? You're actually doing it. And I love the work you're on, the things you're doing, man. If the audience wants to reach out to you, if they want to find you, the podcast, Power Home, give them all the links, the best way to find you, and we'll throw it all in show notes.
Absolutely. JasonWaller.com. So, you know, I've done some speaking, so that takes you there. You can go to TrueUnderdog.com, which is our podcast, or you can go to PowerHome.com, which is Power Home Solar. We're in 12 states now, including Georgia. And then an Instagram, it's Jason Waller, BAM, or True Underdog. Facebook, same thing, LinkedIn and Twitter. I can't tweet very well. I'm trying to learn, but I can do, I got a team that handles most of the social. They do okay. My Twitter game's bad. Oh, and I'm on Clubhouse. I love Clubhouse. I do a trailer park. I didn't name it, so don't judge me. Our team named it. It's from Trailer Park to Rich as F on Thursdays at 5:30 in Clubhouse. Nice. So it's all business tips and, you know, how to scale and how to, you know, not piss your money away and, you know, not let it get to your head. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, someone's like, they got to hold on to that money. You can't, you shouldn't, because then you're playing to not lose. And when you do that, you're just getting by. You can't take it with you. I tell my wife, I've got four kids and a grandkid and another grandkid on the way. She's like, you know, we sell part of the company down the road, you know, because we go public, whatever. What are you going to do? I said, we're going to live and help other people out in the world. Well, what about our kids? Screw our kids. They'll be just fine. Just a little bit for them. We're going to burn through it and do things great for the world. They'll be fine. They'll figure out their way. It ain't about saving it, passing it down. No. And that's where I stand. So we have that argument. But you want to be impactful while you live. Can't put it in a savings account and tell you can't do that stuff. You gotta put it to work and you gotta help people. You gotta make differences, I think.
I agree with you 100%. Definitely check out the club. The conversation's happening there. Absolutely amazing. So I'll remind the audience, Jason's gonna be back with us this Friday. He's gonna give us the tactics of how to actually go about everything we just talked about. Might be a pretty in-depth, awesome conversation to unravel that. Jason, I appreciate your time, the value you brought to the audience today, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Tactical Leadership Podcast, and I hope you got a ton of value out of what we talked about today. I also want to remind you that this show is brought to you by Knight Protection Services. If you're a leader in a small to mid-sized business that does $5 to $10 million a year in revenue and want to improve retention costs, which could actually add up to being twice your employee's salary, all through creating a safer work environment and saving up to 25% in insurance costs, be sure to visit knightprotectionllc.com.